It's hard to be a podcast for midlife women and helping them get unstuck without actually talking about some of the things going on in our bodies at this phase. And today is a deep dive into menopause and fitness and the kinds of things that we should be thinking about in terms of our physical health and our strengths, not only at this phase, but thinking into the future. So today I have with us a woman named Nicole Wade, who's a certified personal trainer and Pilates instructor and nutritionist. And what she has been doing over the last 6, 7 years is transitioning her focus on health really to menopausal women and what our needs are at this phase, driven some by her own needs in this phase. So I'm excited that we're going to sit down and talk about her own journey, what she's been doing with menopausal women, and how she really thinks about the whole person in how we're thinking about what it means to be well and fit. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. Today, we're talking about our health, women's health, midlife women's health. This critical age where we have a combination of lots of things are going wrong all at once, and at the same time, we know we have to really capture this time and invest in our future body and our future health now more than ever. And so I'm bringing on an expert who has dedicated her life to working with women in this space. Nicole Wade is a certified professional trainer. She's a nutritionist. She's a Pilates instructor. And more importantly, she has really dove into menopause health, menopause fitness, osteoporosis wellness, and so much around aligning what women's goals are for their current life, their current body, and their future life and future body with the actions they take today. She's a master's in education and master's in public health holder, and she is very involved in my town, in my community in Melrose, Massachusetts, as a program designer and instructor at the YMCA, which is a very popular place near me to get your fitness on. And so I'm excited to have Nicole on today to talk about what she's learned, how she's gotten to this point, and where she sees wellness and health and fitness for women to be focused today and in the future. Thank you so much, Nicole, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You and I met a number of years ago, and you weren't at this stage of your career and what you've been doing. So I want to start with maybe kind of a backup. Take me through kind of where you were and how you got to the point that you find yourself in now.
Sure thing. So I wasn't always working in fitness. I spent about 22 years in the research space. And I have always felt that when I showed up earthside, the thing I knew about myself to be true is that I was a teacher and I make things, right? Those are two things I knew about myself. I wasn't really sure the road it would take. And I was really deterred in my family from becoming a teacher. It was, my dad saw it. He came from a family of immigrants and he saw this more as being a foot soldier. It wasn't really a financially secure path for myself. And he really encouraged me to go somewhere else. So I ended up in healthcare and education research as a way to get as close to education as I possibly could. And so I did that for a long time. It was a lot of square peg, round hole for me. Didn't really quite fit. I can get really passionate about it. We can talk about, survey design and focus groups. And it was as close as I could get to people and really helping other people. But the truth was, I didn't really see myself as someone who could interpret data, tell the stories that data tells for the rest of my life. I didn't know that I wanted to do that. I really wanted to work with women specifically and in a helper capacity. So, yeah.
I so interesting. So I love that perspective on I can get deep into the data and I can interpret the data and I know what the data says, but I wanted to come essentially off the page, right? Stop looking at the data and start being the data and working with people to change the data and interpret the data in a way that can show up for people and make change.
Absolutely. And once I realized that, and then I had to nail down, well, what am I going to do exactly? because I really wasn't sure. I had a lot of ideas about what I wanted for myself, but I wasn't sure where I fit in anywhere. I felt there was a lot of these stories I was telling myself that are no longer true, weren't true even then. But at 30, I felt a little bit too old. Older. Like I thought, like, oh, maybe, I wasn't a collegiate athlete. I wasn't any of these things that I ascribed to myself that I wanted to be. Like I had aspirations of what I wanted to do with myself. But I thought, well, I'm not really sure. So I spent a lot of time, sort of in this like ego-driven, but also self-deprecating area and very unsure and really anxious, thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. One of the things that led me to fitness was that I became a runner, and it was just the pathway. And I spent a lot of time on running and working on qualifying for the Boston Marathon. Took me seven times to do it. Seven. Once I identified that I wanted to do it, this was really the gateway, right? Because I was still working in research, and I identified I wanted to do this because it felt like something really hard. It felt like something really hard and something that I could overcome, and I could prove to myself that I could do hard things, which I didn't really believe in a lot of ways,
Oh my
right? Like,
gosh.
know that I could do a hard thing. Qualifying for Boston, the second I said it, I cried, like burst into tears. The second it came out of my mouth that I wanted this because it felt like the stakes were so high. And I also wasn't even sure how do you get there?
I just want to pause for a second because there may be listeners who have no idea what the term qualifying for Boston means and how freaking enormous that is. So if you are not in this space, Boston is the Boston Marathon, and there are two ways you can run the Boston Marathon. You can get a bib through a charity and raise funds. That's how a lot of people do it. Or you can qualify to be a legit runner, saying, I have earned my space here through my running achievement and running prowess. You need to do it in a different marathon that is registered as a qualifier for Boston. Like that's what they will market it as. And so, unless you get a very specific time in those marathons, along with your age group and your gender group and all that, you don't get to qualify for Boston. So this is huge. And to hear that you tried it seven times, not surprising. Lots of people will try their whole life and never get it.
Sure. And that's not lost on me how hard it is. That it's a big undertaking. Saying it aloud is a big deal, right? Trying it is a big deal. I sometimes think, what would have happened if I gave up at attempt three or four or six, right?
Yeah, even six.
Six, right? Where I missed it by 24 seconds. And I was so tired of myself at that. I was really tired of the stories I was telling myself at that point about what I could and couldn't do. I had this idea that people who are more successful than me had an easier time. And I look back and I think how silly and ridiculous this was. I thought, oh, they're just better genetics. They are luckier. They don't try as hard. And the truth is they're working a lot harder than me. That's what I realized, is that they were just working really, really hard. And I hadn't figured that out yet.
And you feel like during that marathon training era is when you started unlocking that for yourself.
100%,
Oh my
100%.
gosh.
So then I started coaching runners in a private capacity, but also with community running. It's an organization based in Boston, and they practice at the MIT track. And I coach for them twice a week at night. And I was still just kind of grinding away at my job. And then back in 2006, I got my Pilates reformer certification, and I did pretty much nothing with it for years. I didn't really do a lot with it. It just kind of kicked around in the background. So now I've got a couple of things running around, right? And so I'm thinking, like, how do I start to pair these together? And how do I get from where I am now to this place I want to go? And I'm not even sure where that place is yet. So I couldn't see even where I was going yet.
I'm curious. So, I mean, I know 2006 is almost 20 years ago, but
Yeah.
can you remember at the time what drove you to say, oh, I think I want to add this too, even though I
100.
didn't have a vision?
Yes, I can tell you all about it. So I ran my first marathon in 2006. I took a bib from a charity. I got an email, so no texting back then in these groups. It was 5 weeks before the 2006 Boston Marathon, and someone had a bib, a charity bib that had just not been taken, and they said, "Does anybody want it?" It was for the Walker School for Children, and I was it's part of a different part of my life way back in another part, and I said, "Sure, I'll take it." And I had never run more than 5 miles. And everyone said, "You're not going to be able to do it." And the truth is, I couldn't. I didn't. I took a what we call a DNF, that's a do not finish, at mile 18. They scanned me out, and I was done. I had raised $1,000, which is all they required because I was taking it so late. It's just a wild idea now. So, for listeners who don't know, there's a big financial commitment that goes along with charity running for Boston. It's thousands of dollars. It used to be much lower. Now it's much higher, like everything else in the world. So it's kind of the way it's gone. And I had a lot of questions about why. Well, I mean, I wasn't in great shape, so that was part of it, right? I just wasn't conditioned, but also I had a lot of back pain, so much back pain. And I went to a local running store and someone said, "Oh, I think your core is very weak." It was true. That was true. And someone said, "Have you tried Pilates?" Okay. I don't know. I don't even know who said it. Somebody offhandedly said it to me, someone who was selling me running sneakers, because I thought new shoes would surely clear that up. Let's spend some cash. And I got myself a DVD, a Pilates DVD, and I fell in love. And I went to a local studio. I found one, and I signed up for teacher training the next week. And my dad was just beyond. He said, "You're already out of graduate school. You're in your career. What are you doing?" And I did it, nights and weekends, and I finished, and I didn't do anything with it. And so it was just in the background of things I loved. And since it was so instrumental in my success in running, they paired nicely together. And I've kept them paired closely since then. Back in 2018, I took a Pilates reformer class in a studio, and I was trying to get into a higher level class. This is really the catalyst for all of the change, right? Because I'm still working a full-time job. I'm still coaching track at night. I'm still not teaching Pilates. And I'm just kind of like practicing on my own, loving things, but not really sure where to go. I took a reformer class, and the owner asked me if I wanted to teach, and I said, "No." I said, "No, I don't. I have a full-time job. I'm not doing that. No, I can't do that." And I didn't even feel ownership in that space. Like, I felt not comfortable in a teaching capacity. She asked me to audition. I said, "Fine, I'll audition." I auditioned. She gave me a contract. She said, "I think you're the real deal and you should teach." And it changed my life. I called my boss, I gave my 2 week notice, and I left.
First of all, let's stop there and talk about how amazing it is when someone else recognizes our value and our impact in a way that we just not only can't, but refuse to in ourselves. And the fact that sometimes it's these other things, from everything from like, hey, have you tried Pilates, to these things that come from the universe around us and start to help build who we become, and we don't even understand in the moment how critical those messages are from other people.
Yeah, in a very short time, it was like a snap decision. I said, "Yes, this is it. This is the thing. We're going. And we're all in." And it was life-changing. I became a personal trainer after that. Got a job as a trainer, and then since then have been in the health and wellness space full-time.
I love this, not only because of course I want to talk about the health and wellness space, but the concept of the midlife leap and the people, the women who are making big changes in the middle of their life professionally, some of it questioning what they've been doing, some of it, like in your case, right? You kind of always knew what you wanted to do. You were discouraged from a path, but eventually found your way to, like, I can't shake who I am. This is how I'm supposed to be showing up. This is how I'm supposed to be impacting others. This is my purpose. Even though that purpose can evolve, it needs to be directly working with people and teaching people. I love that we get both stories here. So at some point in time, you go from running coach and really kind of performance based in that space to Now, talking more about menopause and osteoporosis wellness and things like that. Tell me how we start to get there.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed for myself was that as I was aging and going through the menopause process, my recovery looked a lot different than it did even when I was in my late 30s. I just wasn't recovering the same way. And I started to dig a little bit more into that. It actually happened during the pandemic because I used to run minimum 50 miles a week every week. And for maybe 10 years, it feels almost wild to admit it, but I ran something called 10 Mile Tuesday. Every Tuesday, I just woke up and ran 10 miles, and I did it for years. And now it doesn't, if you're a long distance athlete, this isn't a weird thing. This is normal. Like, we're all doing it. And when you have a lot of friends who are also endurance athletes, that's not strange. But to the average runner, maybe, or a person who doesn't run, that sounds like a lot of stuff. It's at some point I thought to myself, why am I doing this? I don't know what are we doing here? What's the plan? And I felt really tired, like bone deep tired, like an exhaustion that I couldn't really recover from. And so I started to do what one does, could we optimize my sleep? Is it this mindset? Do I need new sneakers? They're always going to wonder about that. Should there's some like a new shoe out there that's going to save my problem? Or something like that. And what I realized was I just need something else. And the season of life that I'm in is probably not 10 Mile Tuesday until I expire. Like, I don't know how long we're going to do this for. And what's true at one point, does it need to be true forever? And that's really what I needed to ask myself. And a lot of my identity was wrapped up in my running world. Like who I was as a person felt very attached to the numbers I was putting out, the paces I was hitting. And I'm not, I'm recreationally faster than average. I'm not a professional runner in any way. None of this is, just an amateur. But I felt like it was, those were things were really important to me. And they started to have less importance when I started to think about the quality of my overall health and what is sustainable.
As you're starting to talk about that, a couple of realizations, right? One is, gee, this used to be true about me. Maybe it isn't true anymore, or I'm not recovering in the same way. It feels like, unlike overnight, I'm a Pilates instructor, right? It feels like this kind of like this is a gradual acceptance, right? You don't necessarily have one bad Tuesday or one difficult recovery from a Tuesday and say, oh, I think it's over. And the emotions that can come along with that, maybe failure, fear, frustration, other things like that, have to be heavy as well. Can you think about some of what you were grappling with at the time, looking back, what that transition felt like to you?
Sure. I'd love to talk about this. So I came to running because I thought it was, it seemed more virtuous than other areas of fitness. I had a morality ascribed to it in some way where this seemed beneficial in the world, in like you were doing good. And I don't even know how to explain that beyond to say I don't understand it myself. But in some way, I wanted to be the type of person who was an accomplished runner. This was the idealized version of myself, where somebody might look at me and think, oh, she runs. That has never once happened in my entire life. It never happened. Not even when I've worn a Boston Marathon jacket. That has never happened to me. I also thought that I was going to get a body that looked like a runner's, and that I would get my ideal body along the way. Like, I would have an aesthetic, you're allowed to have an aesthetic. Well, I did not realize I could just say that out loud. Like, I can look how I want, I can present in the world the way I want to. But I thought that I would just run, I would look like a runner, I'd be a runner, I would have a community, and then I would just have this body I wanted as a runner's body. And none of these things really happened for me. And I started to think, what are we working so hard for? Right. And then what happens to the relationships I have with my running friends if I'm not running as much? Meaning, like, I still run 30 miles a week. So I just want to put that out there. It's not like I don't run. Okay. But it's not my whole world.
Noted.
Okay. So, like, I didn't just say, well, that's it. Hang up the shoes. We're finished here. I mean, there's part of me that loves the wild freeness of it. I don't think I can give that up. But what I had to separate myself was from the idea that this pace that I was running for whatever, a 5K, a 400 meter, was somehow tied to my worth in some way. And that was hard.
So much about surfing the quicksand is about helping women get unstuck. And one of the challenges sometimes to getting people unstuck is they don't even realize they are stuck. And a little bit about what I'm hearing in your story is you were stuck in that identity, that sense of self-worth, and not really questioning even what the value it was bringing to your life at that point and at what cost.
And I would say that from the time that first entered my head, where I thought, huh, what am I doing? It took about 12 months for me to say, okay, we can let this go.
Oh my
But it was
gosh.
kicking and screaming, 12 months of internal kicking and screaming.
So you're embracing the kind of your own change in life in lots of different ways and shifting towards the menopause focus at this point, not only for yourself, but for other people.
Correct. And in
Let's
a
talk about that. Yeah.
personal trainer capacity, in a personal trainer capacity. The thing was, when I came to personal training, I'm sort of like, it feels a lot like spinning plates, right? I've got Pilates reformer. I've got some Pilates mat classes that I teach. I've got my running clients that are still, I still have to this day, running clients who've been with me for years. I have, this group of incredible women that I get to train on a personal training basis. And then I have some administration stuff, and everything is kind of spinning, right? But one of the things I noticed was I was trying to be all things to all people, and that is just the kiss of death. It was like, that's not going to work, right? Trying to appeal to, you're just taking any client that comes in. Oh, I'm going to work with adolescents. I'll work with older men. I'll work with whoever is asking for help. And then I realized something is that I was really doing a lot of research on how to be well and fit and whole in midlife, especially where I was going through menopause. And I noticed that I was starting to draw in clients who were also in the same age group, going through the same things. And then I thought, oh, we need to just narrow the focus a little bit. And that's how we kind of got there. So I do train women primarily. I do teach group fitness, so that's all bodies. But my menopause fitness classes specifically are women in menopause or perimenopause or postmenopause. I started just to collect women sort of like 35 to 75. Hence why I started making more smaller groups, which would be the osteoporosis team.
Oh yes. Okay. So I want to talk about osteoporosis in a second. I want to get there, but I want to dive a little bit more deeply into menopause and fitness. And what are you talking about with people? What are you working on with people? What are the messages you're bringing to people in this age when they say, "I'm in menopause, I'm in perimenopause, I'm in this, and I know I need to look at fitness differently."
Sure. So the thing that I had noticed when I wasn't recovering the same way, because it was just all high impact stuff, was that I needed to swap this out for more strength training. And that was how this whole process began. So I started an experiment of N of one and bring all the research in with you. And that was it. So here's what we know. This is going to come out of the National Institutes of Health. So you could research that if you wanted to. But when we're looking at people over 30, between 30 and 40, you're losing muscle mass if you're not putting it on specifically, but about 3 to 8% of muscle mass is lost per decade. Now, this changes after 50. The numbers are more like 8 to 10% per decade. And that's a high amount of muscle mass. So when folks say, I'm older and now my metabolism has slowed down, what's really happened is they have less muscle mass on their body and therefore are less metabolically efficient because muscle is expensive to maintain, calorically expensive to maintain. And so the more muscle mass one has, the more metabolically efficient they are, the more calories they burn at rest, the better body composition they have. So these things are all intertwined.
Okay, so The couple of things there. So one is the muscle mass at its, at its foundation drives your metabolism. And so as you're losing muscle mass, you're feeling it as, oh, my metabolism is slowing down, but you're not really pointing to the reason why. You're just, this is the evidence is my metabolism is slowing down, and therefore I'm tired, I'm gaining weight, or I'm not losing weight as much as quickly as I used to, or it's harder than it used to be, or I'm not recovering as well. And then the other side that's partnered with this is by, just by through aging, you are losing muscle mass, having nothing to do with anything else, just through still being alive. And so that combination really feeds into itself so that the impact is greater. You're not only slowing down, but you're slowing down at a faster rate because your muscle mass is decreasing. Your muscle
That
mass is decreasing at a faster rate.
is correct. So if we're not actively putting muscle on our bodies, this is where things get a little bit dicey because if we've tried to do all the workouts we've done before, I'll use myself as an example, all the miles, pile on the miles, it's not going to work maybe like it once did, or you're not going to feel the same way. Right? So drop in estrogen changes a lot of things. When the estrogen drops as we go through the menopause process, you've got estrogen receptors all over your body. The rates of, just for example, frozen shoulder in menopause is really high. There's like, right? I mean, you've probably known of some women or more than one in your life who's had a frozen shoulder
Yeah,
in
me. I
the
have. Yeah.
process. Okay, there you go.
And I'm struggling with my other shoulder right now, where my husband the other day was like, "Oh, do you have frozen shoulder?" I'm like, "Not yet, but I think we're getting there, and it's scaring me."
Yeah, it's really common. So you have a lot of estrogen receptors in the shoulder. And when there's not estrogen to be sent to the receptors, they're just kind of like, wait, are we getting anything? Like, what's happening? So these things are happening all over the body. And there's a lot of changes that happen with the menopause process. But I specifically speak to Gen X, right? If we're talking about demographics and younger boomers, that's usually the group that I'm speaking to. This group in particular was fed this strange message of eat less, move more, right? And it was just it's sustainable until it's not. And then it's not sustainable. For losing weight and losing fat, there's your different processes, right? Losing weight could be muscle too. So potentially, sometimes I have clients who've gone through a weight loss phase and now they have a higher body fat percentage because it wasn't specifically fat loss. It was also muscle loss, which means now their metabolism is slower. They're smaller or less on the scale, but they're now less happy than before because, well, why do I, what it, what happened? And sometimes I think this can be a result of all the HIIT classes, all the Tabata, high energy, things like that, that we were told we need to do, like all the endurance work and not all the strength. So that's one of the biggest changes that I see that should be implemented is swapping out some of that for specific strength training. And we can dig into what does that mean? Because it's not just something's better than nothing, which is my old viewpoint. So
So let's
not
talk about strength training for a second, because for some people, different things come to mind, right? There's the kind of the CrossFit flip over big heavy tires, barbells, and lifting and weightlifting, Olympic level. Like, what should I be thinking of when you're talking about strength training for menopausal women?
sure. So we focus, especially with the women I work with and for myself personally, on compound strength training movement patterns. You could think of those as your squat patterns, your deadlifts, your bench press, your rows, and your hip thrusts. I also add in some type of a single leg pattern to work on balance, which is a big deal, preventing fall risk in general, or being less of a fall risk, preventing falling. So that's really what we focus on. There's lots of different types in these categories. So you could think of squats, You could use body weight. You could use dumbbells or a barbell or a Smith machine. You could be on the leg press. Like, there's lots of ways in which you could be successful at it. If one version doesn't work, part of what I help you do is find your lift. Let's help you find the things that feel good in your body. Folks who aren't comfortable with weight on their back but can push with legs, perfect. Now you've got a squat. So that's not a problem. The other thing is, once we identify these exercises we're going to do, right? Compound lifts are really beneficial because they work the full body. You're going to get core by default. You'll have to stabilize yourself a lot during these. It's the biggest bang for your buck in terms on time and investing your time, right? And most folks are busy, and they, if you want to spend a lot of the time at the gym, I can help you with that. But if you're trying to just, get in, get out, right? Get it done, then let's be efficient with the time. As efficient as we can be. The other thing is, we want to be lifting in what's called progressive overload. Are you familiar with that term?
No,
Okay.
not at all. Thank
So
you.
when we think about lifting, we want to think about lifting more than we did before. Meaning, let's just use round numbers. Say someone started squatting and they had 10-pound dumbbells, one 10-pound dumbbell in each hand, so 20 in total. And say they're doing 4 sets of 8 reps, and they get to 8 reps and they feel like, oof, I'm really fatigued. That's good. My expectation would be that in a month from now, they're not doing 4 sets of 8 with 10 pounds in their hands, right? Something needs to change. And this is helpful to have a research background for me, because let's talk percentages and what this means for us. So, you've heard the terms like 3 by 8 or 3 by 10 sets and reps. Do you know what this
Yes,
is?
yes. So I do 3 rounds of 8 reps or 3 rounds of 10 reps.
Yes.
Okay.
So these aren't all created equal. So a one rep would be different than 20 reps, would be different than 10 reps. These all do different things. We think, yeah. So I'm just going to define the groups. There's 3 piles, and then we will dig into where we want to be. Okay, so our 1 to 5 rep range, it's in the maximal strength area. This is a really nice area for endurance athletes to be because it polarizes their training. It might sound really heavy, right? You wouldn't use the same weights you were using at a different rep range, but you're being challenged in a way that, say, if you're riding, you've got a century ride, you're riding 100 miles, or you're doing a triathlon. I have a lot of triathlete clients right now. I keep them over here because they're already doing so much endurance. I want to keep this far away, and it's not going to beat them up as much, even though it sounds really heavy. And then this kind of 6 to 12 rep range is called hypertrophy. And that's where we want to be, 6 to 12 reps. This is going to be the place where we are building muscle and we are increasing bone density. And this is really important for us. Now, I'm not saying you can't go outside of these things. Absolutely, try it out. But for the most part, I keep folks in this group, 6 to 12. So say you do a bench press. You're going to press something. I don't care if it's dumbbells or a barbell. But say you get to 6 with your preferred weight. Great. Next week, let's try 7. Let's try 8. When you get to 12, maybe we increase the weight and we start over again. You're not going to try increasing everything at once. You're going to be burnt out in 2 weeks. But you start to sort of tritate in. Anything over 12 reps, sort of that 15 plus, you see that in group fitness classes a lot. And that is leaning more towards muscular endurance. Works really well in a group setting. You kind of get that burn. But if we're looking to specifically build muscle, we want to be pretty strategic about the way that we're doing it. That way you don't get in there, do a little bit of strength training, 2 months go by and you say, I don't know, I didn't really see any change. It's not for me. And to just go kind of do anything.
You brought up so many different things. I have a couple of follow-up questions, but one I want to share just my own personal observation when you were first talking about, oh, you do 3 rounds of 8 reps at, with 2 10-pound, and like at the end of it, you're exhausted or you're really fatigued. And I can imagine that for me, progress would feel, oh, 3 weeks ago, I was doing this and it felt really hard. And now it doesn't feel so hard. I must be getting stronger. But it doesn't sound like that's actually the goal. As or what I heard was, oh, you feel stronger? Okay, it's time to go up. It's
Correct.
not time to feel good. It's time to go up.
If you're doing it right, it's never going to be easy.
And then the other thing I want to go back, because you just talked about like, oh, 15 to 20, that's really for group fitness as opposed to the individual. Tell me a little bit about why somebody might do one or the other or a combination of the individual training and the group training. Because it was really interesting to hear like, oh, group training is a very different kind of fitness focus, whereas I'm thinking like, oh, I don't know, it's a Tuesday, I'm going to go to a class at the Y.
And by the way, nothing wrong with Group X. I teach it. I love it. I think it's incredibly beneficial. Say you're lifting, you're doing your strength training in progressive overload. We're going to unpack progressive overload in a second and the ways in which we can progress. And maybe one of those other days. So maybe you've got 3 days. Let's just do that, right? Two strength training days and one your favorite group fitness class. You love it. You love the instructor. You love to see your friends there. It gets you moving. Really good cardiovascularly. Right, could be great for working on balance, stability, ankle mobility. Let's not forget having fun is also part of this. Like, you know, if you're just like, oh, it's drudgery, I've got to go do the thing, right? I want to get far away from that. So making sure that you're also having a good time. But then again, you know, having a variety of rep ranges can be really beneficial from cardiovascular perspective. So mixing things up could be great. I like it.
Oh,
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah,
Muscular.
that And that's a good point, right? I know there's a lot of that talk right now saying like, oh, cardiovascular isn't where it's at in menopause, walking, you know, all different. We get so many different messages where the answer is probably, right, it's a combination of all of them, and it's based on where you are and it's based on where your goals go. But really being able to say, what am I getting out of this investment of time and energy versus that investment of time and energy? And do they all work together in a way that feels intentional?
Yeah, and I think thinking about like first identifying what your goals are is important, and then asking yourself, is the work that I'm doing supporting these goals? Because here's the thing. If your goal is to increase your muscle mass and improve your body composition, meaning tone, I'm putting this in quotes because that's just a marketing term. It's not, I mean, we know what it means. It just means see more visible muscle and see less visible body fat. That's usually what folks mean. That's actually a ton of work. That's a ton of work. That means you're going to be strength training a lot, and it's not lightweights, high reps. I don't, you could do hypertrophy that way. It will take you a longer time. This is a bigger time investment. And I could talk to you about what populations might be best for this, right? We, you know, such a nuanced conversation. It really depends on who's doing what, who wants what, and is the approach that you're taking fulfilling the goals that you've identified for yourself. Because say you say, okay, well, I want more muscle mass, but you do six classes a week that are all based in this high repetition, and there's no real rest. Say it's all like really high heart rate, lots of HIIT work, and you're doing, you know, 30 or 40 bicep curls, something like this. And maybe the next day you're going to do that again. It might not be the best use of your time, but if you said to me, my goal is to feel good and to do some type of movement every day, green light, go for it, right? But things need to be lined up so you don't spin your wheels and come back and say, well, I tried all these things and nothing's working. I've tried everything, but nothing's working is a sentence I've heard so many times. I've even said it. I've said it a lot. I've tried everything, but nothing's working. It turned out I wasn't trying everything. And I just needed a different approach.
Or you're trying the things, which is exactly where I think you've been building your programs at the Y and with your own private clients around trying everything and nothing's working. Like, well, are you trying the right things for this stage, for this body, for these goals, right? This is what evolved.
Correct. Correct. So aligning our goals with our actions is so important to being able to see the results that we have identified that we want to see.
I do want to talk a little bit about the osteoporosis wellness work that you do, because you said, oh, I'm doing kind of 35 to 75, right? You've expanded your group a little bit. And, you know, and for a lot of us, we have For many women, we have mothers that we know are at osteoporosis risk, or we ourselves know we're at it. I'm starting to get, my doctor has me doing a bone density scan. I know like these things start to come up more. So what are menopausal, perimenopausal age women doing with regard to osteoporosis risk, and what are you doing with that, like, slightly older or the early younger boomer crowd with this?
Sure. So one of the things I noticed was in the beginning, this was a very small group, 12 women. I've expanded to about 70 since then.
Oh my
But
gosh.
it's a lot of people. It's actually just a joy in my life, really. And I noticed that one of the things I needed to know about all these people is, are you under a PT's care? And for what? I started to put out a survey in the beginning just so I understand who I'm working with. And with 12, you can kind of keep track of 12 years. 70 is a whole new thing. And so I thought, okay, let me ask what is their biggest hurdle? Like, what are they looking to work with, right? And so I noticed that I was having a little bit of a drop-off rate from older women with osteoporosis who would show up to the class and look at all of these barbells and dumbbells and benches and squat racks, and they would just turn heel and leave. I can't, this seems overwhelming. I'm not doing this. And I would ask why, and they would say, well, my doctor told me you're not supposed to lift anything. You're supposed to go on Fosamax for your bones, and you have to take it slowly, be gentle, and things like that. So the messaging that they were hearing was, let's get you away from this into something else, keep you safe. I understand that absolutely. So what I did was created a strength training program for them where we're doing the exact same movement patterns, but much lighter weights. And we're moving them in a little bit more slowly. They're still doing squats. They're still doing deadlifts. They're still benching on the floor. They're still doing their rows. They're still doing their single leg balance patterns. They're doing lunges. They're doing step ups, but it's in a way that's more manageable for them. And they are still doing all of it in progressive overload, meaning that we are increasing the weights so we can put more muscle mass on them so they can increase their bone density because these things go together. You can't separate them.
Right. And I've heard you a couple of times also add in balance, right? And how critical that is at every age, but this only gets more critical at that age. So you have women who've been, let's focus, I want to focus on that, this population a little bit. Like, I'll call them the our moms for a little bit. But what are you hearing? They're in your program. They've been in your program for 6 weeks, 12 weeks, something, they've been for a while. What are they saying to you that they're feeling and getting out of it?
So when they first started, this particular cohort, I'm going to talk about them, is that they had first said that they didn't have any goals. Like their doctor said they need to do something, or someone suggested, or they heard about it from a friend and they decided to sign up. When I asked them, what are your goals? Someone just jokingly said, survive this class.
Not
But they are spicy. So I said, yeah, okay, that's fair. And then, upon a little bit of prodding, it turned out they had goals. And I said, well, what are they? Well, can you teach me how to get off the floor without using my hands? Yes, absolutely. I can do that for you. Can you teach me how to do a push-up? Can you teach me how to properly squat so I feel it in my glutes? And I thought, oh yeah, these are good. These are good things. And when they come back the next week and say, I wasn't as sore last week, or I can finally do this on the right side. I can't do it on the left yet, but I'm working on it. Or when I hear them changing the way they speak about themselves out loud, there's a lot of negative self-talk that sometimes people project out of them. Like, I'm so weak, which if I hear anybody say that, I want to chase you across the room and make you repeat it. And then we're going to have a conversation about how I don't want to hear that again. I don't want you to think it. I don't want you saying things like I'm weak, or you're hearing the things that you say to yourself, and you're going to hear the voice in your head for the rest of your life. We have to be very intentional with what we're saying. I'm getting stronger is very different from I'm weak. Those are different things. So we work with that. And now when I hear them say that they've outgrown the weights in the room and they need me to grab them weights from the lifting floor, this is it. This
That's
is,
amazing.
yeah. So it's pretty cool to see them have agency for themselves, identify their own goals, and then make them happen.
And I think that's not unique, right, to that age. I myself, mid 50s, talking about what kind of goals I would have, what feels right for me, where I was a year ago. All of that I think evolves. And it's only when I'm intentionally talking about it with somebody, or somebody is intentionally from their perspective, like someone like you, and I'm like, well, Kathy, what is going on? What do you want to achieve? And how do you want to feel differently and live differently and think differently about yourself? I don't think that happens passively. I think it only happens because we give some brain time to thinking about that answer.
Definitely. Yeah.
I want to shift a little bit because you just started talking about this, and I think it's so important, this concept of the negative self-talk, the stories, the old tapes, I often call them, right? The things I think, well, that can't be me because I've always been this, right? Those things. This work that you're doing helps shift minds, right? Not just bodies, but minds. Where does that live in your practice and your intention at this point?
Pretty high up.
Yeah.
There was a time when I coached that I thought, as coaches, we evolve like a lot. I look back at some of the early, my early coaching, and I'm sure I'll look back at this one day and think, oh, I could have done that better. But I used to think you just hand a plan to a person and you're good. You gave them the plan. Coaching a whole person, it's not just the physical stuff. It's all the other thing. It's the self-efficacy portion of it. If the stories you're telling yourself are not positive, are very negative, this will show up in the work you do. This will show up in how you present in the world. But this will also show up in the gym for sure. If you've always told yourself, like, things I used to tell, I'll use myself as an example. I'm too fat. I'm too old. It's too late for me. I mean, I went through a pretty big transformation. So I speak from experience with body recomposition and weight loss and fat loss and a physical accomplishment. And when I hear it from other people, it hits me in the chest. I think we can't do this. It will hold you back for a really long time. So what do we believe about ourselves to be true? How true is that? Can we challenge these ideas? Right. I know I'm preaching to the choir on this one.
Yes, but let's say it every time. Keep going.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Challenge your ideas. And then how capable do you think that you are? And can we show you how capable you are? So the beauty of doing this in a community setting, the beauty of community fitness and coming together and building a big table and inviting women in is that they get to see each other accomplish, cheer each other on, be here for each other. It is beautiful work. It's beautiful work. Yeah.
The community aspect you're talking about, I think, is so it's so underrated across mental health for midlife women, right?
Yes.
Whether it's I've got friends that I see and I work out with at the gym, or I've got a book group, or I've got people that I can go to when I'm struggling. I was just having a conversation with I've got a really close some tight girlfriends of decades, and we've been recently talking about the idea of like, oh, we can not I don't want to say brag, but we can say what we're proud of to each other, and we do it knowing that we're going to get supported in a positive way from each other. But we treaded lightly into that conversation as well, like, gee, are they gonna think that I'm bragging? They're gonna think that I'm looking at them in a negative way because I achieved something positive. This interaction of women being able to show up proud of themselves is already really hard. But when you're in a setting like yours, everybody's there to cheer everybody else on and be proud of themselves. It's so unique.
It is so unique. I saw a bunch of breakthroughs this week. I see breakthroughs every week. I sometimes think I can't believe I get to do this. It's really incredible to be witness to that, really. But I saw a breakthrough this week where a woman had identified months ago, maybe 6 months ago, her only goal was to be able to bench press the bar. And watching her knock it out this week, it was a lot. I thought, oh my gosh, and to hear that from her, like, what's this experience like for you when this was so important to you? And then just watching it happen, just like, yeah, that's it. That's the work. Yeah.
And it's like not qualifying for six marathon in six times, not qualifying, right?
Yeah,
Like she up
sure.
until every week before this week, she was not succeeding at that, right? She had not checked the box of I did it. And
Correct.
then she could have given up at any point in time.
At any point, but she
Yeah.
stuck with it and we screamed. Yeah, we screamed. I mean,
I love it.
as we should,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. Oh, I love it. This is, I've loved all of this. I want to talk a little bit more about how people can find you or get inspired by you. And then I'm going to switch into the quicksand three, which is what I asked
Yeah.
every guest. So talk about how people can learn more about you, work with you. Can they work with you remotely? Anything like that?
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm more active there. Heart and Soul by Nicole,
Okay.
HEARTNSOUL by Nicole.
Very good.
And you'll find me there.
And I'll put that in the show notes so people don't have
Yes.
to
So you don't have to write that
write
down.
down.
You just click on.
Yeah.
So that's that. And I've got some speaking engagements in and around our community. So I'm out and about in the community. So you'll find me there. I do have, so watch this space. I do have some online groups that are coming. So if you don't live in the Boston area, you're not Boston North, and you'd like to be part of the community, we'll have options for you.
Well, I love that. And I want to make sure that when that happens, I can get back to this community and support that on social media too. So I will make sure that I'm tuned in to what you're doing. I learned a lot, not just kind of the technical stuff like Compound and the progress, we got some good stuff in there, but for me, it's always a good reminder of the many things I am not doing, right? And I'm not going to be the only one listening today who's saying, I should be doing more. I should go to the Y. I should do, right? There's a
Don't
lot of shoulds.
get shit on yourself.
I know. I
If
know.
you can't.
And so it's the getting that alignment between, okay, so what are my goals? And am I showing up in alignment with those goals? And are there actions I should be taking? I could be taking. To meet them. So I thank you for that inspiration. I know you're inspiring me, and I guarantee you're inspiring other people to say, you know what, this has been on my list for a long time. What is a step I could take this week that gets me closer to my goals?
Sure.
So now let's talk the quicksand three. I want to talk about the three questions that I ask all of my guests that are really in line with what I hope surfing the quicksand brings to people. So the first is, what is a tip or a technique that you use to get yourself unstuck and do something that you've been avoiding?
Ooh, okay. I've got stuff here. Hello, welcome to my office. If you're listening, I have two notebooks. One is a journal and one is a goals journal, and they live together in a cute pair. I do this and I write down a dump of all of my goals, and I do this periodically. Sometimes I just get to revisit them every week, sometimes once a month, some of them are annual. And then I journal about them and I use both of them together, and I always use these notebooks in a pair. It's really helpful for me to visually see my goals and imagine myself in that space. And moreover, I like to remind myself that envy can be a very powerful call to action. So if someone is doing something that I want to accomplish, it's just showing me that it can be done. So getting myself unstuck could be we journal, we goals journal, we look at some images, we read about someone else's accomplishment, and we get to work. Action is going to be the best step that you can take. Motivation will follow. You don't get motivated and then take action. You have to do it the other way.
I love that. And I talk about this with people, especially when I'm doing organizing work or if I'm doing my Clever Girl organizing challenge and things, saying you can't schedule motivation. You can't say, I'm going to be motivated next Tuesday at 2. Let me put it in my calendar. When it comes, grab it. And if it's not there, make it.
That's it. That's it.
Second question. If time in history or skills or money were no object, what would be a career or job you might have liked to try?
I could live this life 10 times and not do enough. Okay. So this is part of the problem that got me here in the front. It's a little bit of a leaf in the wind. Okay, here's it. Here, ready? I would love to be Sutton Foster, the lead of Anything Goes on stage on Broadway, Singing and dancing. This Dallas Cowboys cheerleader, yes, I want to try out. I still want to do it. I can imagine a bunch of versions. I never got a PhD. I'm writing a book. I want to be a published author. There's a lot of things going on. So, all the realities, if you understand string theory or you believe in it in some way, there is a version of you that exists in all of these worlds who's already doing it, so it can be done.
I love it. I love it. And if you are listening to this and you're not watching this on video, you don't realize kind of how much Nicole actually looks like Sutton Foster. So the fact that you even just said it, I was like, well, you're already halfway there. Oh my gosh. Okay, final question. When life gets chaotic, what is something you do to recharge or hit the reset button?
I make things.
Ooh, tell me
I
more.
make things. I am an artist, a fiber artist, and I like to draw. I like to paint. I write. That book is kicking around over here. I like to knit things. I like to make stuff with my hands that wasn't there before. Would you like to see some yarn?
Yes.
Okay, so here's a shout out to any of your fiber artists listening. This is the Showgirl yarn, you know. I know, right? So here's the deal. This company is called Junction Fiber Mills. They are up in Vermont. They are a small organization. They've got their own sheep and it's ethical. All of this. They did a special run of this yarn that they called Showgirl, and they do special releases on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. And I had to teach, but of course, I was dumping yarn into my basket and hitting checkout about as fast as I could. Anyway, so this is hot on my wish list to make things right now. Yeah.
So if you're not watching this and you are listening, what Nicole just held up was this beautiful skein of yarn in that like green and orangey color that's very much in the Taylor Swift "Life is a Sh the Life of a Showgirl" branding. And for people who don't know, we are recording this like days after that album came out. So the fact that that instantly went to your shopping cart this week is not a surprise at all, and it's beautiful. I can't wait to see what you do with it. I'm also a hand crafter person. I've done a lot of different things. I love paper crafts. I sew. I did some knitting last year because I couldn't find a scarf that I really liked, and then finally I said, wait, I can make one. I love doing that. I make all of my own holiday cards every year with a different design. So this time of year is when I'm finishing that. So I'm always doing something. And so I find that really relatable. And that absolutely is also my recharge to getting into that, which I love it.
That.
Nicole, thank you so much. I've loved diving in this with you. I know that this conversation is going to be inspiring to lots of different people for lots of different reasons. Again, I'm going to put information in the show notes about how people can follow you, especially as you start to have more of a virtual and everywhere presence, and somebody might be able to kind of work with you. But in the meanwhile, they can just get inspired by you in their scroll.
Yes.
Thank
Thank
you
you
so
so much,
much.
Kathy. I loved it. Thank you.
Great. Take care. Well, that was very inspiring to me, as if you couldn't tell. I'm struggling with my own thoughts about fitness and health and my body and all that. I know I'm not alone. And I like that she kind of called me out on my use of the word should, because I am someone who likes to do that for other people when I hear too many shoulds. And how can I transform my should to my could or I will? I've got that work ahead of me. Maybe you do too. I do want to say that I think we started talking about progressive overload, and I'm not sure we went back to close the loop on that. So we're going to add more information about that in the show notes. I want you to check that out if you had more questions or more curiosity, because I think the point that she was trying to make there is progress isn't just about lifting heavier, right? There are other ways to grow and to increase that ability. And she's going to give me some of those tips to share in that. I hope you enjoyed meeting Nicole as much as I enjoyed getting to know her better and know more about her story. If you have had menopause and fitness on your mind and you have been working on your wellness journey in that space around what you're doing with your body, I'd love to hear about it. Share some comments or head over to quicksandpod.com and get in touch with me on that side. And if there are other topics you want to hear about on this podcast related to menopause and midlife women and fitness and our bodies and our health, I'd love to hear about it. Thanks for tuning in.